All right, Alexander, let's talk about the situation in Iran. A lot of reports over the weekend, over the past couple of days, outlining the pause in U.S. Airstrikes into Iran. We're now on day three, I want to say, of the U.S. Pause in airstrikes. Maybe those strikes start up again. It's always a possibility. But for the time being, we have U.S. military officials from Kane to military commanders in the region briefing the Trump administration on the weapons situation and basically telling Trump two things. The first thing that they are telling Trump is that weapons stockpiles are running low. And the second thing that they're telling Trump is that the airstrikes really are not going to accomplish much of anything. Whatever they were meant to do, they did. I'm still not sure what they were meant to do, to be quite honest. I've read reports saying that the airstrikes were meant to discourage Iran from hitting tankers in the Strait of Hormuz or to degrade their capability of hitting tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's not true. Maybe Iran is now less capable of hitting tankers in Hormuz. I don't know. But it's not very clear what the goal of the airstrikes was exactly. I personally believe that the goal of the airstrikes were two things that they wanted to accomplish with the airstrikes. The first thing that they hoped they would accomplish was some sort of Iranian capitulation. Iran going to the United States and saying, okay, no more. We'll agree with whatever your terms are with Hormuz. And the second thing that I believe the airstrikes were trying to accomplish or trying to figure out was to see if they could shape the dynamics of the battlefield in order to facilitate some sort of a ground operation or some sort of a uranium extraction operation or something along those lines. But they've run into a dead end. And even the mainstream media in the United States, pro-Trump media, anti-Trump media, they're all coming to the same conclusion that the Trump administration is once again stuck when it comes to Iran. Your thoughts?
Can I say one thing before I deal with all of that, which is that in some respects it's gratifying, and in other respects it's very tedious to go reading in the mainstream media after months of fighting, shelling, killing, all of the things that we were saying on the Tehran right back in February and since, that you can't achieve regime change. Your weapons stockpiles are going to get depleted. Your oil reserves are going to get depleted. You're going to be brought to the point of exhaustion. What the military officials are telling Trump now, if they had any sense of responsibility, they should have come and told him in February before all this started. People like General Kane and the ground force commanders, they should have said, look, Iran is a massive country. It has a big population. We don't know what the internal stability of the country really is. These ideas that the Israelis are throwing out of achieving regime change and installing Ahmadinejad, of all people, as president of Iran are absolute fairy tales. They don't convince us at all. And that's what they should have said. That was the responsible thing to have said, given the fact that US arsenals were already depleted before the war even started. None of them had the courage to do that. General Kane raised some concerns at the meeting in February. But apart from J.D. Vance, from what I can tell, everybody in that meeting, which after Netanyahu came along and nodded and said, let's go ahead and do it. It might succeed. Nobody looking forward at what the consequences might be if it had failed. Now, let me just say something else. We are actually at an extraordinary moment in modern history, all the way back to the American Civil War of the 1860s. I do not remember any situation where the United States has had to stop and pause the war because it has run out of weapons. This is an extraordinary thing. If you remember previous American wars, they were always fought by the United States with a super overabundance of weapons. Now, after a few months of fighting, they have been exhausted by Iran. And this makes the situation different from what we had in April and May. Because when the United States and Iran stopped fighting in April, the Americans had managed to get that in the form of an agreed ceasefire between the two sides, brokered by Pakistan, which eventually, as we know, evolved into the MOU. This time, the Iranians have not agreed to any ceasefire. It's just that the United States has been forced to pause. So this is a new situation in this conflict up to now. And again, they're all telling us how Trump is stuck. Back in February, we were talking about Zugzwang, do you remember? And we talked about it many, many times. Well, we see the extent of that Zugzwang now. He is in a terrible position. He's still got his sea blockade, which is stopping oil exports from Iran. But we now see that the Strait of Hormuz is closed. The Iranians are saying if there is a renewed attack on Iran, the Red Sea will definitely be closed. I read about the rate of depletion of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve a few days ago. And it turns out that the United States ran through 100 million barrels of oil in a period of just over a month. Most of the tapping of the reserves actually took place in May during the ceasefire period. So the margins of safety now with oil are extremely low, even if, as looks likely, Trump is going to start tapping into the petroleum reserve again and is prepared to go down below the 300 million limit that some geologists say would place structural trouble in the caverns. I can tell you what I would tell him. I would tell him, go to Iran now. Tell them I am prepared to move forward with the MOU. I want to see the deal done in 60 days. And say to the Iranians, I'm prepared to go back over those 60 days. I'm prepared to go back to Obama's deal, the JCPOA. Even though, of course, he will never do that, and the Iranians won't trust him if he does. But he is now negotiating. He's going to be negotiating with the Iranians from a very weak position indeed.
He'll never do that.
No, yeah. He'll never do that.
Best case scenario is that he just forgets about the whole thing.
Yes.
Doesn't talk to the Iranians, doesn't talk to anyone. Allows Iran to negotiate with Oman.
Yes.
Which they are negotiating, and yes, they're trying to figure out a solution to manage the Strait of Hormuz. We'll see where that goes. But the best case scenario for Trump is just to forget about the whole thing, for the Trump administration.
Yes.
Let Iran, Oman do whatever they're going to do. No. Who cares how much coverage it gets in the media? Maybe tell the U.S. media not to cover it so much, not to cover Iran anymore.
Yes.
Send out some guidance to all the media channels and say just don't cover Iran as much, and just whatever happens. I don't know what else to say, because telling Iran I'm going to go back to the JCPOA, Iran's going to laugh that off. Telling Iran you want to go back to the MOU, they're going to laugh that off. Trump is never going to do those things anyway.
No.
So the best case scenario would be for the Trump administration or the Trump White House's advisors to just tell the president, just let Iran and Oman negotiate whatever, and let's focus on domestic issues.
Forget about regime change. Stop talking about all of these things.
I don't know what else to say. Yeah.
Exactly.
Never going to happen. This is never going to happen. But that seems the more realistic outcome, because everything else is impossible for Trump to do. And Iran won't agree to any of it. Yeah. And you make a good point on the situation with energy. One of the driving factors for pausing these airstrikes may not only be the weapons situation, but also the oil situation. Oil was starting to creep up to 100. Now it's gone back down to around 80, I want to say 85, plus or minus, somewhere around there. So the Trump administration is not going to want to continue the conflict and risk the oil going back up. And of course, you have China now back in the oil importing game.
Exactly.
Where in May, June, they weren't importing. Exactly. They were also dipping into the reserves. So the energy situation is a no-go. Netanyahu's going to be in D.C. for the Graham funeral. He's going to meet with Trump. How's that going to go?
Well, one would hope not well. I mean, by now, Trump should understand that the advice he's been given by people like Netanyahu is bad. Apparently, he's very angry with Netanyahu. But we know that he gets angry with Netanyahu and he ends up ultimately always doing what Netanyahu wants. I wouldn't assume that this relationship is indeed dead.
Hmm. Okay. Karg Island, Pyxax Mountain. Mm. The New York Post is also saying an operation to extract the uranium, to get a hold of the uranium in Fordo and Isfahan.
Isfahan,
right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, they've already been through that. They've already tried that operation in the past, and it ended disastrously.
Yes.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
That's what happened. Mm. What do you make of all of that?
Well, I mean, it's fantasies. These are coffee house dreams. I mean, they're not going to happen. I mean, if they tried, they would end in disaster. I mean, if the US occupies Karg Island, the Iranians will start attacking US troops on Karg Island. There is very, very little cover there. The US is very short of air defense interceptors. Everybody acknowledges this. So what does the US do? It would need to send its air force to protect the troops in Karg Island, which would bring the US Air Force within range of Iran's air defense system. And we would start to see aircraft losses. Of course, the Israelis and any number of commentators before the war were saying that Iran's air defense system had been destroyed. Well, we've seen that it hasn't.
So the next logical move for the Trump White House would be to try and get a pause, an extended pause in the conflict, then rearm, resupply, and move on to round four, whenever that will be. Maybe round four will be in 3 months. Maybe it'll be in 3 years.
Yes.
We don't know. But the goal now, I would guess, is to try and figure out the narrative, the script, as to how to get to a ceasefire and how to pass that along to the American people as a victory and not a U.S. retreat, a peace through strength, ceasefire, victory with Iran. War is put on hold, but we have not forgotten our objectives of uranium enrichment, and Iran must never get a nuclear weapon. And the Strait of Hormuz and stuff like that, all those talking points that the Trump White House was putting out there. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
And if you do, how does Trump now accomplish this?
Well, as for the politics of it, he's going to have a very difficult get. He's going to be a very hard sell, but that's what he's going to do. He's going to say, we depleted the Iranians, we destroyed their most of their military facilities and most of their military things. We've achieved a great victory. We've pushed the Iranians back. And somehow or other, he will package it. He will sell it. He will get enough people in the US to listen to him. And if he's able to get the energy prices lower, they will probably, those people will continue to vote Republican. So I think that's probably what he will do. I think that's almost certainly the line he's going to be taking from now. But as to your other point, that this isn't over, you are absolutely right. This is absolutely not over. This is round three. There is inevitably going to be a round four. The only question now is when, how long, whether the US is going to be able to replenish its stockpiles. And in fact, it's obvious now it's going to need far more stockpiles than those that it had before the war started. It can't just get back to the situation of 27 February. It needs to go far beyond that. It needs to reorganize its military industries. It needs to do all of these things, but it's going to certainly try, and it's certainly going to plan for that. And the Iranians, on their part, do need to understand this isn't even a truce. It's not a ceasefire. This is a pause. It's the Americans ceasing attacks on them. The Iranians need, from this point going forward, to get their house further in order. They obviously need to build up their military capabilities. It's clear that they've done that very well, but they need to do that even better. They need to get a functioning air force organized. They need to work harder still on how to develop their own defenses. And above all, they've got to sort out the problems of their domestic economy, which, in my opinion, are entirely related to the financial system. If Iran can deal with this problem it has of an unstable currency and constant inflation, then there is no reason at all why a country like Iran, with enormous resources, an educated population, why the economy shouldn't take off.
All right, the best question for last. Another possible route in the conflict between the United States and Iran, another possible path this might take, is the combining of the two big wars, Iran and Project Ukraine, which Zelensky, or probably better to say Zelensky's backers, appear to be trying to push. We had Ukraine hitting a cargo vessel in the Caspian, an Iranian cargo vessel, in which one person did die and there were casualties. We have multiple warnings from Iran, multiple warnings from the foreign minister, Araghchi calling up Kaya Kallas and passing those warnings along to Ukraine. Obviously, there is some effort to try and merge these wars together. And there are benefits for those that are running things, those that are in back of Zelensky and telling him to do this. There are some very clear benefits in trying to merge the conflict together. There's money benefits, and there's also benefits of bringing the U.S. deeper into this conflict on all levels, which is something that the deep state and the globalists absolutely want, to bog down the United States indefinitely into these conflicts, both with Iran and for Russia. What do you make of the effort to merge the two conflicts? What's happening in the Caspian? What's happening with Kazakhstan? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, there clearly is that effort. I mean, Zelensky's absolutely defiant about the attack on the Iranian cargo ship. He says if Iran helps Russia, then it's a target for Ukraine. So clearly he's trying to merge the two wars. Clearly that's what he wants to achieve in order to get further American support. And no doubt some of his European backers are urging him on to do that. And there's something else. I mean, how did Zelensky know where the ship was in the Caspian Sea? He must have obtained that information from American satellites.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it's only the United States, realistically, who has that level of capability. So there are some people in the United States who want that too. And I've discussed in another program how Tokayev, the Kazakh president, met Putin and said, you know, why don't you agree to the freeze, which is what the Europeans and the Americans and the Ukrainians all want. It's better for everybody. Putin rejected that. But why did Tokayev say this? Because Kazakhstan has been coming under pressure, almost certainly internal pressure, from the pro-American oligarchs within Kazakhstan, who we know exist. But also this attack on the Caspian Sea terminal, the Caspian Petroleum Terminal, I should say, on the Black Sea, and the attacks on the ships that were loading with Kazakh oil there. They were clearly also intended as a warning and as a pressure point on Kazakhstan. So yes, that game is being played, but it is an absolutely, I mean, if they go down this route, if they push it too far, it's piling folly upon folly. Because if the wars are merged, then of course Russia and Iran merge. I mean, their forces merge at a time when the Russians are producing weapons in enormous quantities, when the Iranians are able to do the same, when they're both, to some extent at least, backed by China, and when the United States is overextended and overstretched. You want to expand a war? You want to take on two adversaries at the same time? Well, there may be some, you know, great classic textbook that tells you that that's what you should do. But it seems to me to make absolutely no strategic sense whatsoever. But then so little about Western policy over the last 20 years has made strategic sense. I would not be at all surprised if there are powerful voices in Washington and in all the European capitals who say, let's simplify these conflicts. Let's do so in a way that commits the United States fully into the war. We'll also get Israel on side and on side with Ukraine as well. Up to now, Israel has avoided getting too deeply involved in Ukraine. So let's merge these two wars. So it's foolish, it's reckless, it's a disastrous strategy. But are there no advocates for it? Unfortunately, there undoubtedly are. And they're there in Washington.
Yeah, if you're about to go down in two theaters, you're going to lose two wars. Why not merge it and just blow everything up?
Absolutely.
Right, you bring in, you merge Iran and Ukraine. You bring in Israel. You try to bring in Kazakhstan. You bring in Azerbaijan. You try to bring in Turkey, and you just cause mass chaos and destruction, and you push everything towards a world war.
Yeah.
And that way, you save your own hide, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, this is the other thing, and it's the thing that you've talked about. Many people have talked about that. There seems to have been this loss of fear in world war anymore. There are some people who are so obsessed with their various strategies, that they're prepared to embrace even the risk of world war. I mean, as we discussed in the recent program, I mean, Gordon Hahn has spoken about how there are people in Europe who absolutely do want a war with Russia. And they may not be many of them, but they are influential and they are powerful And they are the people who, up to now, win all the internal battles. And the same has been true in the United States.
Yeah, and the key to further entrench the United States in all of this and to provide zero possibility of any type of walk back from the United States, because the United States is the key for the globalists. The key to all of that is by combining Russia with Iran, by combining both of those wars and both of those enemies, and then you throw China in there, and you have the axis of evil against the collective West. Yeah. I mean, that's the way you do it. Because without the United States, none of this works.
I know. It's strange to say this, that, you know, finally one turns to Tony Blinken. But he's actually come out. He said, you know, what is this about fighting China? You know, they've got a far bigger domestic market than we have. They have three times our manufacturing. And just talking about the United States now. If even Tony Blinken could see it.
But he also said after that statement, he said that if the Allies combine their forces together, they could take on China.
I know, exactly.
So that was his full statement, Tony Blinken, which is actually quite, I mean, on the one hand, he makes sense.
Yeah.
And then he continues with an allied effort to take on China, which is frightening.
It's terrifying. I mean, because as you rightly said, without the United States, none of this is possible. But then the United States, or rather Tony Blinken, says without the Allies, none of this is possible. Yeah. So you're going to put, you know, all sorts of weak parties together, and you're going to make a strong one to fight the Chinese, the Russians, and the Iranians. And presumably, by the way, also the North Koreans, because it's difficult to imagine that they wouldn't want to get involved, all at the same time. I mean, it's completely rational to me. But we are living in extraordinary times. And as I said, those voices aren't there. Unfortunately, the truth is that they are.
Well, you're right about the North Koreans too. Good point, because Zelensky, when he was speaking to Sky News in a recent interview, he said not only that Iran has attacked Ukraine, but also North Korea has attacked Ukraine. So he's putting the North Koreans in this as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, they want to expand this war, and they want to create a much larger, unified conflict.
Absolutely. Of course. Not surprising, because they're losing the war too. Just as the US is losing the war in Iran, Ukraine is much more conclusively losing the war in Ukraine. So they want to expand the war. This has ultimately been Zelensky's strategy from day one. But he's never been closer to getting it.
Yes. All right. We will end the video there, theduran.locals.com. We are on X, Rumble, and Telegram. We are also on Substack. So check us out there and go to Durant Shop, pick up some merch. All those links in the description box down below. Take care.